The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice, and all economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any person for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax, and penalties may be imposed on such persons, and each listener should seek advice from their own tax advisor, legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes, live Saturday morning edition. Very excited to be here. It's going to be a terrific day in Bloomington, without question. One of the best days of the year. Today is Lemonade Day. Saturday, May 21st, all around Monroe County, you're going to see lemonade stands up and at them, and hopefully the rain holds off. Looks like it will. I looked at the radar this morning, mostly north of us, and then I think around 1 or 2 o'clock, a little spat might come through, but for the most part, it looks like it's going to be a pretty good day to get out and support these young entrepreneurs as they built a lemonade stand. They've developed product, they marketed it, they may have even had an investor or two to learn how to run a business. So it's really about sparking the dream of entrepreneurship and then learning what to do with money. You know, once you have the money, what are the appropriate things to do? You save some, you spend some, and you certainly give some away. And that's a great lesson for all of us to learn, not just those little guys out running around setting up lemonade stands. So check it out. We're going to talk more about it. I'm sporting my Lemonade Day t-shirt with my mentor stamp on the back. So as soon as the show's over this morning, I'll be out running around and doing some Lemonade Day testing, because we're going to be the judges and do some testing. We're looking forward to that. Also, Eric Giesler will be with us in just a few minutes. But also, when you're over at the Southside Kroger, I'm sure there'll be a lemonade stand there, maybe even two. The Bloomington South wrestling team has a car wash, and I know your car is really wet right now, but look forward to the good days to come. Clean it up, wash it up, give them some money. They're trying to raise money to go to Disney for a dual team tournament the second week of June. You know, a lot of kids can't really fork out the dollars necessary to do that type of stuff, so that's what this is for. It's a fundraiser. So even if you really, you know, don't need your car washed, go by, maybe throw them a few bucks just in case. My son last night solicited a few donations from some friends, and he was pre-fundraising for the big car wash. So when you go through Kroger South, I'm sure there'll be a lemonade stand there, maybe two. Go through, get your car washed, talk to the kids, just support. It's going to be a great day in Monroe County, so we appreciate everyone getting out and supporting the causes. If you may know that I was not here live on Thursday night. I did a little segment and then replayed the previous week's show because I was committed. I was committed to something that I had been really looking forward to for a really long time, the Mecum car auctions up in Indianapolis. Still going on today. Today is the big dollar cars, but the cars started selling on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's mostly hot rods, classic cars, things like that. So normally things like this don't work out for me very well. If I stick to what I know, I'm in good shape. But when I venture off into the high weeds and get involved in things that I'm not very knowledgeable on, normally get my rear end handed to me. So about 2 years ago, I was bidding on a classic car, a completely restored car. It was a 1942 Chevy Special Deluxe. Now, if you have any history knowledge, you'll know that in 1942, General Motors shut down to then begin supporting the war effort in World War II. So these cars were only made for a few months, 30,000 of them made. That was it. Production cut off. This car completely restored by a gentleman. He passed away. Unfortunately, his estate sold it. I was fortunate enough to then pick it up. I thought I was fortunate enough to pick it up. But then as I registered it for the big Mecum auctions this year, I was a little bit nervous. I'd never done this before. So I take a boatload of friends up with me. We're all hanging out watching this thing unfold all day long. I spend up there all day Thursday, about 5:06 on the nose. Actually, my car rolls up on the stage and they start to sell it. Now, keep in mind, I have about $19,000 or $20,000 wrapped up in this vehicle. Classic cars are not really the hip thing right now. It's mostly the muscle cars. You know, that older baby boomer, 65, 70 years old, has money in their pocket, and they want to buy that 1960 Chevelle or that Corvette. I mean, that's what they're after, what they saw growing up. You don't really have a lot of people knocking down your door to buy a 1942 car. So it's beautiful, though. It's beautiful. You can actually go to YouTube and type in Hayes Chevy, Mecum Auctions, and you'll be able to see a clip of it that a friend of mine recorded. Really, really cool. So it heads up on the auction block. We're kind of tense. We're up there. NBC is filming this whole thing, and they start off 20, 20, 20. Finally get a $20,000 bid. I'm like, all right, and then 25. And then all of a sudden it's 30, 31, 32. We're excited. We're jumping up and down. That thing sells. They go, sold 32,000, sold 32,000. And we walk off the stage high-fiving, pumping, fist pumping the crowd. It was awesome. So that's why I wasn't here on Thursday night. I've been looking forward to this. And for once, one of these things that I ventured off and did that was out of my wheelhouse finally worked out. So that's it. That's why I wasn't here. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Eric Geisler will be joining us live. Rate worries are racking the bond market. You know, just a few months ago, there was no chance that the Fed was going to raise rates come June, and now it's back on the table. We'll be talking to Eric Geisler about that. We'll also be talking about the unprecedented situation we find ourselves in when it comes to the yield curve. Basically, we'll explain that, but when your short-term rates rise and long-term rates fall, there's not a lot of benefit for trying to buy long-term bonds, and what does that tell us from an economic standpoint, and should we be worried? We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Sold 32,000, sold 32,000. I'll never get over that. It was awesome. Check it out on YouTube. It was terrific. Just type in Mecum Auctions. Hey, Chevy, it's so much fun. Eric Geisler joins me now live on the telephone. And Eric, it wasn't long ago. In fact, I have a Wall Street Journal article here in front of me from April 28th. Not only does it have Ted Cruz and Carly on the front of it, so a lot has changed since then, but they said right on the front page, Fed signals no rush to raise interest rates. Well, then just this week, we have rate worries rack bonds, and they talk about the combined strength of the economic data here at home, plummeting interest rates overseas, causing kind of this distortion in the U.S. bond market, but that the Fed rate hike is back on the table. Eric, we talked about this last night at a finance committee meeting we had here locally, but we're kind of in some unprecedented times right now when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the Fed has kind of got themselves in a bind, and unfortunately, they are trying to operate in a vacuum a little bit while the rest of the world, the rest of the central banks in the world, are trying to figure out what they want to do as well. So, I think that we are getting some positive news. At the same time, we're really not seeing the growth that everybody kind of expects coming out of a recession, and so it leaves the markets in a quandary. What do we do? I think from a bond perspective, it has kind of shrugged off paying attention to the Fed very much. But I think the other markets, the equity markets, continue to pay a lot of attention because short-term rates certainly have an effect on dividend rates, that sort of thing, and what companies are borrowing their money at. So
when the Fed
a bit of a quandary.
When the Fed indicates that, hey, we may start short-term interest rates is where it seems to have the most effect, and then we had investors selling short-term government notes. That pushed prices down. Then yields on the long end, the 30-year, 20-year, 30-year, we see money flowing in from all around. One, safe money, a place to put your money so you don't lose it globally. But also globally, we see zero interest rates, negative interest rates. So we're starting to see, if you kind of plotted this thing out, a flattening of that yield curve where short-term rates are more closely to the long-term rates. And in the past, Eric, that has indicated recession possibly coming, certainly when you have an inversion of the curve where long-term rates are lower than short-term rates. But because of what's happening, I think it's difficult to predict that, or at least the bond yield curve to predict that we have a recession on the cusp of our
well, I don't, I wouldn't recommend saying this as gospel, but I just don't think we've been here before. We've never had central banks with the balance sheets that they've had around the world. We haven't had the stimulus that has been placed, and so I'm not sure that we've ever been here before. So to reflect back that a flattening yield curve means that we're going into a recession, but you're right. I mean, in the last month or so, we have on the short end of the curve, yields have gone up about 10 basis points, whereas the long end has kind of not moved or actually moved down a little bit. So I think you're exactly right that I think the market is pricing in about a 25% chance that rates will be increased by the Fed in June. But I don't think we've been here, and I think that is the uncertainty is what remains in the market. And I think you see the market trading that way, in that it's not really going up and it's not really going down.
And just as a reminder, that what the Fed controls is the overnight borrowing between banks, and the banks are flush with cash, so there's not a lot of need to do that borrowing, and that's why I don't see this being a big shock to the system. But when you look at the yield on, let's say, the 30-year Treasury, which I didn't look at it this morning, but I think it's
about 260.
Yeah, it's under 2.7%. I mean, that is usually the indication of long-term inflation and growth. So it's basically saying we're not going to have much at all, if any.
Well, if you look at inflation-linked notes that are sold by the government, they're often referred to as TIPS, and they most of them have around a 5-year maturity. If you look at that compared to just what a 5-year Treasury note or bond that you could go out and buy, that difference is about 154 basis points or 1.54%. That would indicate that's where the market kind of thinks inflation's going to be for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at 1.5% inflation for the next 5 years and the Fed is targeting 2%, that would actually suggest why do we need to raise rates?
Right, right. And you also, you know, you think about it, though, at least we have some inflation, and we're not fighting deflation as much as what we had possibly anticipated. For sure, Japan's been fighting that
for 20 years. Globally, there is that concern of deflation.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the good old 90s with Eric. A lot of talk about the economy of the 90s being that we're in a presidential election year. But, you know, there's a lot of reasons the 90s did what the 90s did, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about that. You know, we had tax cuts, easy credit, but we also had the spending wave of the baby boomers raising their families, which really means a lot. And interestingly, I've been reading, Eric, a lot on, and I just kind of sometimes wonder, people don't get this, but they say Americans, I was reading this in the Wall Street Journal, Americans didn't shop as much as retailers had expected last quarter, leaving some puzzled over the disconnect. You know, they say many retail giants posted dismal earnings, and everyone seems to be confused by this. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the 90s and then relate it here to the 2016 era that we're currently in. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. The 1990s, everybody. I was married in 1993, finished up at IU that exact same year, started in my business in 1994, February of 1994, and didn't have many clients back then, of course, because you start off new, but we had a really, really strong run in the 90s. It was awesome, and everybody thought, man, it's so easy to make money and to make money in the markets, and jobs were great. And Eric, I think right now everyone reminisces, especially this being a presidential year, that, man, if we could get back to the 90s. And I think they believe that someone can get into office, wave a magic wand, and just pull us right back to where we were. But the 90s was a different time. We had the baby boomers, by and large, raising their kids. And when you raise kids, folks, you spend money. And when you're a consumer-based economy, that's what it takes to drive things forward. We had tax cuts of the late 80s that were starting to take effect. We had easy credit. I remember, credit being a little bit tight when I was first trying to get a loan to build a deck on my little house. I mean, it was crazy back then. And I was mad because I said to a local establishment, which I do still do business with, although I threatened back then never to do business again, that you wouldn't loan money to an upward mobile person. I mean, I was so mad. But then all of a sudden, they'd loan money to anybody. Money was in the market. And Eric, I think you look back at the 90s and people think, well, we can wave this magic wand and go back. But a lot of things contributed to the 1990s being what they were, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I think all of those things, and I think you've hit on the important one, and that is the demographics. We're now talking about 20 or 30 years later that the demographics of the entire world has changed. And I think that's what makes this economic situation that's kind of started since 2008 and has continued. I think that's why it's been so difficult, because of the change in demographics worldwide. We know of, it's well publicized, the struggles of Japan specifically, but Asia in general. Europe is aging, and we're aging. And what has come along with that is a lot more debt. I just read recently that credit card debt just went over $1 trillion for the first time in history. So I think that demographic that you hit on is the biggest. And yes, we, from a political perspective, we often think that if we just elect this person, whether it's locally or nationally, that all of our problems will be corrected. And what's interesting about the 90s is that there was both a legislative and administration that were willing to kind of work together and address these problems. But as we all know, those things have long passed.
Was that the old? That was the old contract with America time, for sure.
Yeah.
Boy, it was a long time ago, folks. But it doesn't seem that long. Time goes by really, really quickly. You know, Eric, we had, according to By the Numbers this week, the second largest month of tax receipts ever. According to, of course, By the Numbers. Again, we don't have an income problem in America. We have a spending problem, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's interesting that we continue to have a consumer-driven, in large part, economy. But consumers seem to be, at least recently in the near past, that we seem to spend less. So we've kind of gone from that 80s and 90s attitude of upward mobility and drive little BMW 2002s to, hey, maybe I ought to hang on to this car a couple more years.
And then order a new Jeep Wrangler. I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Your kids. So, I mean, but to going back to the demographics, exactly what you just said is exactly what's happening. People that are exactly in your boat, Eric, your age, both your girls are now grown. You know, they're out of school, they have jobs, and now it's just you and Lori, and, you know, you're at the pinnacle of your career. You don't have all the expenses of raising two girls in front of
yep.
you. It's behind you. And now people are not focused on, you know, they might go out and buy that one little toy that they have wanted and now they can really justify. But they're, by and large, paying down their debts. They're saving like wild people. And they're preparing for retirement. And that's not expansive. That's not. It's not. So when you have the people that have the money not spending the money, and you'll see reports, the big ticket items, you know, are coming off the shelf, maybe some luxury purses and things like that. But it's that echo boom, or the millennials that people call them, it's going to take a while. But just like your daughter just having a baby, it's starting. You know, they're going to start having kids. The spending wave will pick up again. And in the next 4, 5, 6 years, we'll start to see it pick up. But these things don't happen immediately. So we may have the next president come into office and the economy's slow and sluggish and they blame it all on him or her, and then you move into, you know, 8 years after that where things start to pick up again and someone happens to luck into office at that point, and then they get all the credit for having a great economy. And that's what happened in the 90s. That's what happened, you know. I mean, that's what's happened. So you can't wave the wand, put someone in office that you project is going to change the world, change the economy. Yeah, you can have some good policy working together, like Big E said. You can have favorable tax treatment on certain things to try to have, you know, things move in the right direction. But, Eric, there's so many factors, and you know this as well.
Well, you can also add that, you know, we kind of went from being an exporter of manufactured goods after the war. You know, we exported a lot of manufactured goods, and now our largest export is now services.
Right.
So, you know, if you look at the slow growth that occurred in the 70s and the early 80s, a lot of that had to do with that there was a transition in the United States away from manufacturing and into exporting services. So we're now, whether that's technology, whether that continues to be services, we don't know. But we know all of these things take a long time to move through the system.
So from an investment standpoint, a person is trying to just do the best they can with their investments. Eric, we've talked about this last night at that finance committee meeting. You just have to simply control what you can control, and that is your spending, your savings, your time horizon, and then have a purpose behind what you're doing and why you're doing it, because it's hard to control the return on investment. And when you talk
it's really more about managing risks than it is about managing returns. a prime example of that is the what I call the demise of the hedge funds, because of automated trading and a lot of other things, that the resources that are now available, hedge funds are becoming a thing of a past, and it's been very difficult for those managers to maintain those returns. And I think it's as an investor, it's about having a plan, managing those risks and sticking to it. And not every time you hear the news, the headlines that you've just read, you just stick to your course, and the outcome will be what it'll be.
Eric Giesler, partner of mine over at CFCI, has been joining us live on the telephone. Best bond guy in the business, as they say. Eric, we appreciate you taking the time. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you bright and early, I'm sure, on Monday morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, buddy. We'll see you. Guys, let's take a break. When we come back, my buddy Rodney Johnson wrote a terrific piece called No Thanks to the Saudis. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about how the Saudis have this oil-based economy, of course, is a very socialistic economy, and what they're trying to do to move in a different direction, create some different industries, some different technologies, so that people can have jobs in different areas and start to wean them off. And we're going to talk about how they're going to plan to do this, and maybe you shouldn't bite. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Sporting my yellow lemonade day shirt, it is May 21st, which means that it is lemonade day. A lot of kids will be out sporting their lemonade stands, so go up, support them, talk with them, engage them. I mean, this is how they learn. So go out and buy some lemonade. When you walk up, talk to them about their recipe, you know, what they did to market their stand, and just encourage them, because these are the entrepreneurs of tomorrow, and small business is the key to our future. It's absolutely the key to our future. That's where most jobs are being created, not in the big factories and the conglomerates. They're downsizing. It's the upstarts that we need. And who knows? One of these kids may just be the next, who knows? I mean, it could be the next Bill Gates or something, or next Bill Cook. So you never know. Go out and support these kids. Also, while you're over at the Kroger South, I'm sure visiting a Lemonade Day stand. Also, the Bloomington South wrestling team is washing cars. And I know that's been a little gloomy this morning, but I see it's going to be sunnier this afternoon. Great day to get your car washed. Donate money. Those kids are trying to raise money to wrestle in a tournament down in Florida at the Disney Duels, they call it. And a lot of kids just can't, you know, come up with the cash to do that. So this is a way that they fundraise to then give the scholarships to the kids that need money to go. So again, the Bloomington South wrestlers are hanging out down at the Kroger South. So visit the Lemonade Day stand and visit the boys and girls wrestling for Bloomington South. Hey, also, I mentioned this, and this we're going to continue to do this, give this away, but I was part of the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group meeting a few weeks ago, and Jeff Levine, who we're going to have on the show, terrific mind in the industry, has created this definitive guide to required minimum distributions for baby boomers. It's a pretty lengthy document, 34, 35 pages long. We're giving it out free. If you go to Ed's website, irahelp.com, I think it's about $10, $20 to buy it, but we will send it to you for free because we are part of the group. They've allowed us to do that. If you don't want to read 40 pages on minimum distributions, you're not that kind of guy or gal, we'll send you the Calculate Your RMD in as easy as 1, 2, 3. It's just 5 easy steps to calculating your RMD. So again, that's free to any of our listeners. And to get that, just go to our website, cfci.us, cfci.us. Contact us. It'll ask you for a bunch of information. You don't have to put in all that stuff. Just say, hey, here's who I am, here's my email, and I'd like the RMD guide, and we will get that out to you. Last week, I think it was, my friend Rodney Johnson, who we've had on the show many, many times, he is the editor of Economy and Markets. He wrote a really strong piece on the Saudis and what they're struggling with and what they're trying to do, and he titled it, Thanks But No Thanks to the Saudis. He's talking about Saudi Arabia and how they really have a problem. Their country's wealth is completely, completely dependent on oil revenue, which state officials use to pretty much bribe the population into submission, to be honest with you. But the price of oil is hovering, in the mid to upper 40s right now, after falling from over $100 a barrel about a year and a half ago or so, or maybe 2 years ago. So the Saudis have been dipping into their piggy bank to make good on their social promises. but they need oil prices to be at least over $60 a barrel to balance their budget, and that may not be in the cards anytime soon. I hope it is, but I don't see it happening. So looking into the future, obviously, of American fracking, these country officials have decided they really need to think about changing course. They came up with a plan. To break the country's dependence on oil, it's going to invest in other technologies and industries, and retaining its working population, settling the country in a course for the 21st century. But to finance this transition, the government's going to try and sell shares in its national oil company to the public. Most likely, they'll list its shares on a national stock exchange and then maybe hubs like New York or London. But when the shares of the oil company hit the market, it could cause a feeding frenzy. But Rodney's word of advice is don't take a bite. This company actually is called ARAMCO for Arabian American Oil Company. That's what it's called. So they say it could be valued between $2 trillion and $3 trillion. The Saudis are talking about selling about 5% of the company, which would raise about $100 to $150 billion for their investment. Shareholders would get pretty much no control with that little of a stake in the company, no visibility, no assurance the company officials are going to be working on their behalf, like most publicly traded companies. And there's a history full of self-interest dealings that are meant to benefit the Saudis and nobody else. So when this happens, and it will happen, most should say thanks but no thanks. It's going to be tempting. It's going to have a buzz about it, just like some other big IPOs that we've seen or selling of shares on the open market. Because the history isn't good. I mean, back in 1933, the Saudis sold a concession to the Standard Oil Company, and that allowed the company to explore for oil. It took about 5 years. They eventually found it. Then they started paying the Saudis a set fee for every unit of oil produced. Then during the 40s, other oil companies joined in, and several major oil fields were found. Then the Saudi Arabian folks, the government there, decided it wasn't getting paid enough after the Western energy companies started cutting deals with other countries in the area, like Iran. So in the 50s, the Saudi officials persuaded the company to split in its profits 50-50 between the Western firms and the Saudi government. Now, of course, when I say persuaded, that means they pretty much threatened to nationalize the company's assets. That's a pretty good deal, right? So production continued in the 50s and 60s. Then OPEC was formed in 1968. Several oil-producing countries came together, of course, after a lot of geopolitical tensions bled into their oil operations. I wasn't even born in 1968, but I was born by 1973 when the Saudi government again was pretty dissatisfied with the profit-sharing arrangement, and now they wanted ownership. So again, the Saudis persuaded the companies to sell 25% to the Saudi government of the oil company. The share was increased to then 60% after the 1973 Israeli Middle East War, and then pushed to 100% ownership by the mid-1970s. Now the Saudi government didn't just take the company, they did pay for it. They paid about $2.7 billion back in 1973, and that equates to about $15 billion today. So you basically have now a company that's worth what? Who really knows? I mean, they think it's worth like, I don't know, $155 billion or something crazy. I don't even know what they think it's worth. But let's fast forward to the present. The country hopes to end its reliance on oil in its national economy. And it's going to be very, very difficult given that the Saudis produce little other than oil. But their goal is, and to do it, they're going to have to raise money from private investors who will end up owning part of this oil company that the government is actually trying to de-emphasize. So why do you want to buy into something, this is Rodney's point, into a company they're trying to de-emphasize? So if the Saudis aren't successful and the oil remains by far the biggest contributor to the economy, what happens to the shareholders if oil prices are stuck at low levels for a long time? Do they get anything? Dividends? Anything at all? Who knows? The Saudis are not going to joyfully ship money out to shareholders when the country is bleeding cash themselves if they've only offered 5% of the shares outstanding. So given their history, given the Saudis' history of being self-interested, I mean, of course, that's their right to do that. When these shares hit the market, I would suggest, Rodney would suggest, go into it with eyes wide open, be cautious, because when it comes to the end of the day, the kingdom's going to siphon off assets for other projects. The chances of these shares being regulated or pushed over into a corner of an unloved corner of the market is highly, highly likely. Hey, let's take another break. When we come back, we'll be talking about some questions of the week. This is one that came up, and I did some more research on this, but We talk about the abandonment of accounts around, and they end up in the unclaimed money. area. But I did a little more research because it seems so, you know, good on the surface. But I've, as I've looked into it a little bit more, I'm thinking there's some bad here as well. So we're going to talk about the unclaimed money situation and how money gets turned over to the estate and why, and then some of the really, really troublesome things that can happen, especially when it relates to retirement accounts being taken over or abandoned and given back to and given to the state. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Appreciate you. Hey, this is a live Saturday morning edition. I appreciate everyone listening on Thursday nights as well, but I know that Saturday morning is the most popular time that people listen as they're out tooling around in their vehicles and going to the farmer's market, hitting up a lemonade day stand today, going over to Kroger, getting their car washed by the wrestling team, all that fun stuff that we do on Saturday mornings. I love tooling around early on a Saturday morning. My wife used to sleep a lot. That's why she's so beautiful, I'm sure. And my son, of course, he's a teenager now, and that's all he does is sleep. So I get a little alone time in the mornings, and yeah, I love tooling around and messing around and checking out things. So those people are the listeners of this show, and I appreciate you very much. Hey, if you'd like a copy of the Definitive Guide to Required Minimum Distributions for Baby Boomers, email us at cfci.us. We'll send you a copy. Or if you have the need for an abbreviated version, the Calculate Your RMD as Easy as 123, we'll get that to you as well. We might just send you both. Just go to our website, cfci.us, contact us. We'll send them to you right away. I was at the Ed Slot meeting a few weeks ago, and we had a segment on the enchantment rules. And I thought, enchantment rules, that doesn't sound very good, nice. Well, this is the abandonment rules that happen with things such as, you know, bank accounts, uncashed checks, insurance proceeds, utility deposits, you know, investments, safe deposit box that are rented by financial institutions, rebates, all that kind of stuff. If unclaimed or abandoned, then it ends up in the unclaimed money coffers of the state in which you reside. Well, that's actually a revenue source for the state. I didn't realize that, but a lot of times, you know, they take into that, into maybe a stock or something. Those dividends don't appear to be returned to the original owner whenever there's a claim made. So there's a lot of, and there's fees associated between the state and institutions, so it is a definite revenue source. But where I saw some issues is that what qualifies as abandonment, and it's really difficult to find. I mean, I Googled, I Yahooed searched, I did everything on Indiana abandonment rules or enchantment rules, and it would always say no. You know, I could find stuff that would talk about it and give you some ideas. Okay, if it hasn't been changed, reviewed, talked about in 2 to 5 years, but there's no, doesn't seem to be a real definite answer to this. I'm sure there is somewhere buried in a big long statute, but I didn't want to read, you know, 750 pages. I have better things to do, like, you know, fishing and things like that, than to go out and read that. But the fact is that sometimes these things get turned over. I was talking with Rod Holloway at our office. He had a kid account for one of his kids that was deemed abandoned, and he looked at it online. He didn't make any changes to it for a couple of years, but, you know, he was receiving statements and all that, and then all of a sudden, it was gone. One day he went on, gone. He found out it was turned over to the state. He calls the provider, and they're like, well, we made attempts to contact you. He's like, I haven't moved in years. Everything's still the same. They didn't make a very good effort to contact him. So just be aware these things can happen. But where it can really be a problem is on retirement accounts. And I saw a forum, a blog written on the IRAhelp.com website, Ed's website, and it talked about how this company encheated a Roth IRA to New York State a couple weeks ago because of inactivity. And they talk about how, you know, it was turned to cash, and when they go reclaim it, can they put it back into a Roth IRA? And the answer was no. So if you have an individual stock, you have some insurance proceeds, something like that, that's not a big deal. But if you have a retirement account or an annuity encheated or abandoned, I like the word encheated. It just sounds good. No, it doesn't sound good at all. But that is something that could happen to you, could happen to me, it could happen to anybody. It happened to Rod Holloway, and he's in the investment business. He's sitting here looking at this child's account on a regular basis, even though he didn't make any changes, that was considered abandonment. So just be aware of that more so than anything else. And you might find out, if you haven't made changes in an account for some time, you may want to take the effort and call that custodian, that record keeper, and say, hey, what would cause you to turn this over to the state? And just make sure that you do whatever is necessary to make sure that that doesn't happen, especially on these retirement accounts. All right, let's move on. We have RMD. Okay, I have a required minimum distribution question. The first baby boomer turned 70 this year. My dad turned 70 this year. When do I need to take my first RMD for my IRA? I turned 70 in June. Well, it's 70 and a half, so you would be 70 and a half this year. However, if you want, you can delay taking that until April of the year following 70 and a half. So you could wait and take that RMD for this year next year. But if you do that, then you'll also have to take next year's. You'll take two distributions in 1 year. Now, sometimes that makes sense. If you are, say, working or you have a windfall of income in this year and you won't next year, it might be advantageous to delay that RMD to 2017, even though you're going to have to take two of them. So that's your answer. Left my job this week. Another question. I'm 58. I need some cash to get by until I turn 62 and apply for Social Security. What's the best way to get money out of my retirement accounts? Well, here's the thing, going back to these ages that we talked about on last week's show. If you're 55 or older in the year you terminate service, you can access money from your 401ks, your 403b plans, your employer-sponsored plans without a penalty. You will pay the taxes, of course, but without a penalty. If you made a mistake and rolled it to an IRA, now you're subject to the 59 and a half age rule. So for you, it would be smart to at least keep the money you need between now and 62 in that retirement account at work. Don't roll it to an IRA. If you roll it to an IRA, the only way to get it out is early distributions, penalty and taxes, or the 72T rules, which requires you to take a substantially equal payment over a period of 5 years or until you're 59 and a half, whichever is later. If you take anything more or less, then you're subject to penalties on all of those distributions previously. So you want to stay out of 72Ts if you possibly can. In your case, really easy. Take the distribution from your retirement plan at work. Pay the taxes, no penalty. Most plans don't pay out monthly. Some do, most don't. You would want to take just one big distribution. They're going to mandatorily withhold 20% of that for tax. Doesn't mean you're going to owe 20. That's just their rules. Many times they don't pay state tax, so you want to keep your eye open for that. Roll it over and go from there. All right, let's see. You got another one here. I'm trying to see if that's even worth talking about this morning. Nah, it's really not. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Lemonade Day and what's happening around our community. I also have the major retirement planning mistakes that a lot of people make. We have four or five of them. We'll talk about those and maybe a few more things if we have time. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Producer Jim asked me a question about the encheatment rules. He said, hey, if you have a 401k plan, can it be encheated? And if it's a current 401k plan that you're participating in, you're putting because a lot of people don't really look at it that much or go online and look at it. So would that be considered abandonment? No, because you're continuing to put contributions in. You're working for that employer. It's active. You're good. Now, if you left one behind, it's possible that that could be encheated. So you want to make sure, again, that you get all your ducks in a row, lasso up all your assets, make it convenient, and stay in touch with them for sure. In fact, one of the things I wanted to talk about were the major retirement planning mistakes. It talks about, and this comes directly from Yahoo Finance, but it says a couple things about this. Don't retire too soon. Work as long as you can. If you can, Social Security benefits, of course, arise 8% each year that you don't take them past full retirement age. That's one of the big retirement planning mistakes. People retire too early. And you know, it stresses me out. I have a lot of people that retire in their 50s, and some go back to work, fortunately. But, man, it is such a long, long road. A lot of things can happen between 58 and 88. So work as long as you can. Don't misjudge healthcare costs. A couple retiring at 65, they're going to need about $240,000 to pay for future medical bills. That's according to Fidelity Investments. Don't expect a short retirement. This is a big one. Social Security Administration says about half of today's 65-year-olds are going to live to age 85. If you're married, the chances are one of you will live into your early 90s. One of the other major retirement planning mistakes, don't withdraw too much. I mean, a lot of people withdraw about 4% of their savings annually, but don't withdraw too much and have a good distribution plan. I don't really like the 4% rule anymore because things are just too unpredictable. you get out of the gate bad, and you have a couple negatives out of the gate, you could be setting yourself up for a real disastrous result down the road. We call that the sequence of returns. And don't, this is what I was getting to earlier, don't be hands-off with your investments. Watch the annual account fees. I mean, even 1% difference could mean thousands of dollars less in retirement savings over time. And just be active. Don't be passive. I think a lot of folks, and you know, if I look at my client base, you know, we have some that are so easy. You know, we almost have to drag them in to do reviews. But I wish they were more engaging. And then we have the opposite, where people are like, you know, on you all the time and in your face and asking questions. There's kind of a good balance there, where you have to be trusting of the investment professional that you've chosen to do good for you. But don't just turn it all over and don't ask questions. That's like going to the doctor and they say, you know, they say, how are you feeling? I feel good. Okay, take this medication, take this. Well, I didn't really need that medication. Well, just take it. And you say, okay, and you walk off. I mean, you need to be engaging with your medical professional just like your financial professional. The other thing is don't touch home equity, IRAs, if you can help it, to pay for college costs. A lot of people give up their future for the now. And there's other ways to come up with paying for college. We've had the Stegmullers on with Class 101. They have all kinds of ideas on how you can make college affordable, picking the right school, coming up with money. You'd be amazed how just by knowing what they know, how they can help you so much. So those are some major retirement planning mistakes that people make. All right, today is May 21st. It is Lemonade Day. I'm sporting my yellow T-shirt right now with Lemonade Day, and I'm going to be running around town here in about 15 or 20 minutes, checking out some of the Lemonade Day stands. I was real active a few years ago as the champion of Lemonade Day, participated in a lot of the educational programs, helping young kids sort of learn about marketing and product development and things of that nature. Enjoyed the heck out of it. Well, they asked me to just be more involved sort of from the side this year, which is great. And Dan and Tina Peterson took over being the champion of Lemonade Day this year. And the kids, there's like 700 plus kids enrolled. When I did it, there was like 300 or 400. So it just shows you get the right people involved, the numbers go up. So obviously kicking me to the curb was the right thing. I kicked myself to the curb, but that was the right thing to do. But get out and support these kids. It's really, really something, and they're so cute, and you know, they try so hard, and you know, they've been looking forward to this, so just get out there. I had friends of mine last night at dinner say, hey, is there certain stands that you want us to go support? And no, not necessarily. I mean, I think just getting out and checking them out, if you see one, stop, walk up to it, talk with the kids, buy some lemonade, you know, maybe even give them a little tip, and I mean, money and advice, both are helpful. And yeah, just get out there and enjoy it. And again, if you're out running around and you're by the Kroger South, I'm sure, again, there's a lemonade stand, maybe even two there. Check out the Bloomington South Wrestlers. They're going to be washing cars today, so support them as well. They're trying to raise money for a trip to Disney to wrestle this summer. So, guys, we appreciate you hanging out with us on this Saturday morning. I love doing Saturday morning live radio. My energy level is so much better than after a long Thursday. So everyone have a great weekend. I'll be back live in the studio next Thursday night at 6 o'clock. You can always hear it on WGCORadio.com. Goodbye, everyone. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.